Democratic convention's coming up this weekend here, and I think folks might be pretty familiar with national conventions. I mean, we just had the Republican National Convention here in Wisconsin. Crazy to think that was already 2 years ago, coming up in about a month or so here, 2 years ago in July. But state conventions, how are they the same? How are they different? Maybe what's happening at these conventions at a state level compared to maybe a national convention?
Yeah, they are much more focused on the particular state. They are much smaller in size. They aren't the media spectacles that those national party conventions have come to be known as. But they are very important. They are attended by the hardcore party activists. They are followed closely by those who are deeply involved in party politics. And those types of individuals have disproportionate influence in politics because the party activists, those who are deeply involved in the party, they can influence those in their orbit. And so even though it might not be the massive basketball arena that we saw for the national party conventions, and even though it might not get wall-to-wall national TV coverage, these are still important moments for the party to rally and for those who are most invested in the party to try to define where they want the party to go.
What are you kind of looking forward to or keeping your eye on the most in this Democratic state convention coming up? Because you've got a handful of candidates. You know, it's reminded a lot of folks of 2018 when there was, you know, 6, 7, 8 candidates. So what are you kind of keeping your eye out for this weekend here compared to maybe a convention like, I don't know, the Republican state convention that's going to, you know, maybe be a little less fanfare because Tiffany is already kind of the endorsed candidate?
Yeah, I think the Republican convention was an opportunity for the party to rally around Tom Tiffany. But this is a very different story due to the complete uncertainty still about how the Democratic Party nomination phase is going to turn out in this race for governor. I mean, you've got 7 key candidates and they're all still in the race after the filing deadline of June 1st, and it remains to be seen if all 7 of them are going to stay in the race actively campaigning through the August primary. But I think that this convention could potentially add some clarity to this race in terms of the messaging of the candidates, in terms of how they're trying to position themselves relative to their competitors. This has been a pretty low-key campaign so far. One of the defining characteristics of the Democratic campaign for governor has just been the fact that a lot of voters are unfamiliar with these candidates. And I'm not sure how much any of the candidates have really moved the needle on that front, but the clock is ticking. It is starting to tick. And that August primary election is going to be here sooner than we know. And so I think that this convention is an important milestone in this campaign because it could cause things to maybe heat up between the candidates. And I think it's going to mark a moment where candidates really need to feel that sense of urgency to ramp up their campaigning efforts through the August primary.
Could we see, I know some state conventions, they endorse a candidate at those conventions. Will we see something like that potentially at this convention this weekend? And then maybe after the convention, could we start to see maybe some of those candidates start to kind of fade back and drop out of the race a bit?
Yeah, I mean, as far as an endorsement is concerned, this is a too divided field. I mean, this is such a divided field that I'm not seeing that type of consensus emerging within the Democratic Party ranks around any of these candidates. And I'm not sure any of these candidates is even really approaching majority support within the party. So I think we're going to exit this convention with the field still pretty darn muddled and a real sense of uncertainty about who exactly has a legitimate chance of winning the primary election. And I think consolidation is a very real question from now until the August primary, because although the 7 key candidates have all qualified for the ballot, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to stay in the race. So we saw that in the 2022 primary in the Democratic Party for Senate, where you had folks like Alex Lazary and Sarah Godlewski, who qualified for the primary ballot but dropped out of the race in advance of the primary, leaving things open for Mandela Barnes to capture the party nomination. We may see something similar I think for many of these candidates, it's going to come down to money. And can they raise enough money to stick it out through August? That's a tall order when you're competing with other people for valuable donor dollars. And when it's going to take a decent amount of money to raise that all-important name recognition for the candidates. So I think that my read of the race is that Mandela Barnes and Francesca Hong have certain advantages in terms of maybe standing out a bit from the field in terms of the amount of support that they have compared to their competitors, where it seems like Barnes and Hong have a bit more support than their competitors do. But I don't think either of them is running away with this thing. And there is plenty of opportunity for others to close the gap, but it's got to happen pretty soon.
Is there any sort of risk in maybe the Democratic Party as a whole not consolidating? You know, candidates just keep hanging on, and voters aren't quite sure who to go with. Is there any risk for the party as a whole then when it comes to maybe not putting forward the best candidate because, you know, certain candidates aren't dropping out or and are maybe, you know, I don't know if eating up votes is the right term, but are kind of just taking those votes away from maybe who would be a stronger candidate than come the actual governor's election in November?
Yeah, I think you raised such an interesting point about that idea of a strong candidate. And one thing that I think is really interesting to watch at this convention is how the convention goers define strong candidate. For some of them, strong candidate means electable. Who is the most likely to be able to defeat Tom Tiffany? Now, to make things even more interesting, a lot of them disagree about what makes someone electable. For some delegates to the convention, electability means running on a progressive platform that contrasts with the MAGA conservative platform of Tom Tiffany. For others, electability is about centrism or moving at least towards the middle and appealing to disaffected Republicans and voters who may not have strong ties to either party. So I think that's a fascinating ongoing conversation within the Democratic Party nationally, but it's particularly salient here in Wisconsin because you have such a wide range of candidates. So for every theory about who is electable, you have a candidate who probably matches that theory more or less in this Democratic Party field. So I think that the conversation about electability is fascinating. And I think that we're going to see that type of conversation play out at the convention and beyond. I would also add that as we get towards the primary day, I think the consolidation question is important because it changes the strategy and the math. Where if we see this seven candidate field consolidate to four, then that changes the math of how you win the primary. I mean, a candidate could plausibly win a seven candidate primary with like 25 to 30% of the vote. And that would leave the party pretty darn fractured coming out of the convention, coming out of the primary, because you may be in a situation where the nominee of the Democratic Party was not the choice of the majority of the voters in the primary. And there are certain risks involved in that. And a fractured field could also enable someone who maybe has that more narrow influence to come out on top, rather than having to win over 60 to 70% of the vote, or rather than having to win 50% plus one, you could win 25 to 30%. And so the reason that I'm paying such close attention to consolidation is because if the field consolidates, then the strategies and the math for the other candidates change. And if the field doesn't consolidate, then we could plausibly have a candidate coming out on top in this primary with a relatively small percentage of the vote.
How are you kind of seeing, or what's your take on just how maybe the Democratic candidates break down by maybe age demographics? I would have to imagine a candidate like Francesca Hong is very popular in the 18 to 25, 18 to maybe 30. You got candidates that are longtime politicians or have been associated with, you know, Evers in Joel Brennan and Missy Hughes. So I think there's a wide range of candidates, obviously, but that also means there's probably a wide range of how the age ranges kind of attract to those candidates.
I think it's a crucial question because when we think about primary elections, they tend to be pretty low turnout. And when you've got a low turnout election, it's very likely that the electorate is going to skew older, because you're going to get those more consistent, more regular voters showing up. And so I think the question about age demographics and how they map onto the support for the candidates is a crucial question. But I agree that Francesca Hong seems to be touching a nerve with some younger voters. Question is, are those voters going to turn out in the August primary? And are those younger voters going to be enough to win the primary? Now, as I mentioned earlier, Hong's challenge or Hong's ability to win the primary, I think she's got a pretty clear path to win it if the field stays at seven, because I could absolutely see a world where you've got a divided field. Hong is able to eke out 30% of the vote through a combination of younger voters and more progressive voters and those who check both of those boxes. Now, if the field consolidates, then someone like Hong is going to have to get 35, 40, 45% of the vote in order to win. And that changes the math and the strategy quite a bit and means that a candidate is going to really have to demonstrate their broader support. So the question of age and voter turnout more generally is crucial. I just don't know what to expect at this point for voter turnout in the primary. I think we're still a little bit too far off from the primary to make a firm prediction. I think that voter turnout is a critical question, though, because that is absolutely part of the strategy, or expectations about voter turnout are going to tremendously influence the strategy of the candidates.
What do you think it says about kind of the state of, Wisconsin politics now here in 2026, where we've got, all these Democratic candidates and they themselves are on a wide range of where they are on the left, right? You've got, Hong, who some people would, say Democratic socialist, so she's very far left. Missy Hughes, maybe a little more left centrist because of her business background.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just so unique that there's so many candidates and they have such a wide range in where they are on kind of the political spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes this a very interesting and compelling primary just from an analytical perspective, because each candidate has the opportunity to carve out their own distinct brand. But then they have to communicate that brand to the public. So they need to have the money and the campaign operation to do that. And then they also have to persuasively argue why their theory of the case is better than their competitor's theory of the case. If this is a party that does prize electability in its candidates, then these candidates are going to have to make solid arguments as to why they are the most electable, more electable than their opponents. We've seen hints at that so far, where we've seen candidates, for example, take slight jabs at Mandela Barnes for losing the 2022 election. We've seen candidates here and there say that, maybe the others are too establishment or the others are too far out there to the left. We've seen little hints at efforts to try to distinguish oneself from the rest of the field, but we have not seen full-blown negativity by any stretch. And as we get into this next phase of the campaign, and I do think that the convention marks the next phase of the campaign, are we going to start seeing the negativity ramp up? Negative appeals in a primary election are very risky and they can also be tremendously rewarding. So I think that's something else that I'm watching.
As far as Tom Tiffany goes, he's sitting there on the Republican side, nice and cozy. He's going to be the candidate. Do you think he wants a consolidated field come primary, or do you think he would prefer seven, eight candidates? Because we talked about that, electability factor, and if a Democrat wins by with 28, 30% of the vote, are they going to be able to beat Tom Tiffany? I think it's something that he's probably asking himself too.
I would completely agree. I mean, I think that there's a couple questions here, and I think both are really interesting. Like, what type of a candidate emerges from a fragmented Democratic Party field? And can the party come together behind that eventual nominee? Now, these days, I think that parties are quite resilient in their ability to come together behind nominees, even after a contentious and divided primary, because voter partisanship continues to escalate. People are more and more loyal to their preferred political party. They're more and more devoted to defeating the other party. And that tends to be a very unifying factor. So I think for me, I'm pretty sure that even if this is a fragmented and complicated primary, which it seems like it's on track to be and has been to date, I do think Democrats can feel pretty good about the prospect of the core party supporters aligning behind the eventual nominee because they can lean into the negative campaign against Tom Tiffany to mobilize their supporters and to get people on the same page. Now, that's a bit of a separate question from the kind of candidate who emerges from a complicated, fragmented field. And if that's a more leftist candidate or a more centrist candidate or someone who's a bit of an outsider or someone who is able to build a small, relatively small, devoted following, but isn't necessarily able to get that mass market approval or that broad support. I think that's a very interesting question because we might expect that in a one-on-one primary, you get a different type of winner oftentimes than in a seven candidate field. So, the question, what type of candidate, what type of nominee does a fragmented seven candidate field produce, I think is front center in how Tom Tiffany is thinking about this, how his team is thinking about this, and what that might mean for the November election.
You and me have talked about over the last couple years here about, everybody's eyeing 2026 because there's going to be a new governor now. We know that for sure with Evers not running. Both chambers are kind of up for grabs, one maybe more so than the other. In your eyes, the way that the Democratic field is kind of shaping up here, is there a possibility where we almost, I think it would be kind of ironic for how Wisconsin operates as such a purple state, where chambers flip from Republican to Democrat, and then the governor flips from Democrat to Republican, and it's like, well, we're kind of almost in the same boat with different people at the lead. How realistic is that?
I don't rule anything out. I don't rule anything out in Wisconsin politics. And that very possibility has crossed my mind, where you maybe get a deeply flawed Democratic candidate for governor. And we just don't know at this point what that would look like. But you get a deeply flawed Democratic candidate for governor, but those legislative candidates are able to ride the wave of the normal laws of gravity during the midterms. So there is a world in which all of that happens. I'm not sure how likely it is. I also do think that we've got to pay attention on that note about those national factors. The Trump approval numbers are going to be really key to watch as we're sizing up how this campaign is unfolding for a couple reasons. First, Tom Tiffany's brand is so aligned with the Trump brand that I think naturally, the because of that relationship there between how Tom Tiffany has positioned himself and how Donald Trump has positioned himself, and how Tiffany has really positioned himself as a close ally of President Trump, I think it means that Trump's approval rating is going to matter quite a bit when we think about how this November election is going to turn out, where voters might be casting their ballot for or against Tom Tiffany based on how they view President Trump. And I think Democrats, if President Trump's approval rating is low come August, September, October, are going to be eager to make that connection between Tiffany and Trump. Now, it remains to be seen, of course, what Trump's approval numbers are going to look like at this point. It's hard to say. And also, Democrats are going to have to run the type of campaign that resonates with voters. And we just don't know if that's going to happen either. So there are absolutely a number of weird scenarios that are on the table, depending on the candidates who are involved and depending on those broader political conditions that are sure to affect the election.
As you and me have always said, never boring in Wisconsin. Any sort of race, governor, state senate, assembly, whatever it might be, never boring. What else? Anything else? Before I let you go, I appreciate your time. But anything else whether it's this weekend at the convention or between now and the primary that you're kind of keeping your eye on regarding, you know, whether it's just the Democrats or anything Tiffany might be up to over the next month and a half or so.
Yeah, you know, speaking of like what Tiffany might be up to between now and August, you know, I think what's going to be in a couple of interesting questions, I think, about Tiffany. Does he position himself more towards the middle on certain issues? And secondly, can he develop broad statewide support? And I think this is a golden opportunity for him to start developing out that statewide support, because it's one thing to be a successful politician in a deep red or a deep blue congressional district. It's very different to be able to win a statewide election in a purple state. So I think for Congressman Tiffany, there is no question that his political brand has gone over very well with his constituents in northern Wisconsin. But that's not going to be enough for him to win statewide. He's going to have a message that resonates with folks around the state. And so I think this summer, while Democrats are going at it, is an opportunity for him to expand that statewide coalition and really prove his chops, really show his chops as a statewide candidate. I mean, we have seen it go both ways when a member of the House runs for governor. We have seen members of the House really meet the moment in showing that they're not just a creature of their district, but they're someone who can do well statewide. We have also seen members of the House be unsuccessful at showing appeal that goes beyond their district. So there's no doubt that Congressman Tiffany's brand and message work very well in northern Wisconsin in his congressional district. And I think while Democrats are involved in a complicated primary election, it'll be interesting to see if he can make some inroads with voters statewide. And from his perspective, position himself quite well for the general election and whichever Democratic nominee emerges. It's an interesting challenge that Congressman Tiffany has, because he's campaigning for the general election without knowing who his opponent is going to be. And I think that that raises both challenges but also opportunities for him.
Absolutely. Well, Anthony, again, always exciting, always insightful to chat with you. Looking forward to kind of over the next, well, not just month and a half for the primary, but all the way up until November, chatting with you here and there about what's going on. I appreciate the time again here this afternoon.
You got it, Sean.